Whoever is listening, guys, welcome back to another episode. Long overdue. We've been inactive for a couple of weeks. It's job interviews. It's wrapping some things up before spring break for Clemson. And today, guys, I have an exciting episode with Patriots beat writer Mike Kadlec for WEEI, the Boston flagship radio station. Mike is currently in the midst of Patriots free agency, so I'd be remiss if I didn't ask, what was yesterday like? Let's just go through a day in the life of a very active Patriots free agency.
Yeah, it was crazy. Thanks for having me, first of all. Happy to be here, help you out with this. And so, you caught me at a good time because it is definitely crazy season, not only with the Patriots, but in the NFL in general. They're making moves. They made a lot of re-signings. Obviously, you see Mike Onwenu and Kendrick Bourne, Hunter Henry, some cornerstone pieces on offense. They transition tag Kyle Duggar. They're hoping to get a deal done with him. Then they bring back Jacoby Brissett to be the bridge quarterback to whatever they ultimately end up doing with the quarterback position on offense. And so it was an active day. I think they still need to, make a couple more moves to put them over the top, but I like where they're at so far. No splashes yet, but it definitely busy. You're right. As far as, you sit and wait, right? Free agency opens up at noontime and it's like, you look in the clock, it's like, oh, 15 minutes gone by. Like, what's going to happen next? And then there's sort of a lull. And then all of a sudden at like 7:30, they made like three or four more signings. So it was fun. It was hectic, but it was only day one. So looking forward to see what they do next.
I see a constant, I think it was on Twitter, it was a picture of this guy, and I think he was playing Pokemon Go, but he had like 16 phones and all connected together, and he's pressing them all at once.
Yeah.
Is that something similar to what you're having to do with just
constantly sure.
Hitting the refresh button or checking
texts?
Yeah,
you're hitting the refresh button, you're getting, articles ready for the website to try and, update everybody, planning podcasts. Like one time I had three computer screens up and I had my phone on one stand, just like refreshing. It was nuts. But it's fun. I wouldn't have it any other way. So yeah, that's a good example of what it looks like is that Pokemon meme. Definitely.
Yeah, it's I think for me, I'm sitting in class and I'm just constantly hitting the refresh button, waiting for something to happen. I think the only thing that really took, not by surprise, but was sort of the big exciting move was Kirk Cousins signing with the Falcons.
Yeah.
And just how he's been able to master the free agency landscape and make
an
insane amount of money.
It's incredible. He's done it like the best I've ever seen in football, right? He continually was open to signing the 1 year franchise tags in Washington for however many years, just knowing it was, a fully guaranteed 1 year deal, stayed healthy, did his thing, cashes in with Minnesota, and then going into his 36-year-old season off a torn Achilles, is able to manage a 4-year deal worth like over or like $180 million or whatever it is in Atlanta. It's incredible. It's I think he's like the first or second highest paid player of all time now, behind only Aaron Rodgers. So yeah, it's incredible what he's done, and he really has been like the prototypical free agency player over the course of the last 10 years.
His moves need to be studied. But today we're talking a little bit about free agency and. Something may happen during this podcast. I don't know, Mike, if we've got like several computer screens in this background.
Just... I'm doing the Twitter scroll right now as we go. So if anything happens, we may have to postpone again. But for now, we're going to ride it. We're going to roll with it.
So if the Pats sign Calvin Ridley in the next 30 minutes, we're going to hear an oh no. And then
exactly.
All of a sudden it's just going to break apart. But today we're here to talk about the Dynasty. It's wrapping up its docuseries. It's been a riveting couple weeks with... 8 episodes are currently out. We were originally going to plan to film on, I think, Friday of last week, but the two episodes that I ended up watching were incredibly detailed, fascinating, whatever word you want to use. So I was like, Mike, I think we need to wait and get your opinion on these next two episodes because I think they provided the most discussion. So let's just dive into the last two episodes that dropped on Friday. It was episodes 7 and 8. My big picture takeaway was... this wasn't just a mess on Belichick's part. There were so many just moving pieces, not only with the Deflategate saga, the toll it took on Brady, just the continued national coverage. I mean, I think they paralleled an international news story about, I don't know if it was ISIS or whatever, but then they were going,
yeah.
First in the story, we have Deflategate. Later on the show, we'll cover something that's really important.
It was like a war story across, it was insane.
So... it was the Jimmy Garoppolo saga and Deflategate. What was your reactions and how did you approach these two? Because I think we talked in our last, where we tried to film last, that these were a couple of really important episodes.
Yeah. It's definitely, like you said, it's like, yeah, it does seem like there's a little bit of a bias towards Belichick in this whole series. And like, I get that side of it. But at the same time, this isn't, and people have complained that, you know, they're not showing a lot of football and actual football and winning, but this isn't the three games to glory. This isn't Tom versus Time. This isn't NFL film. Like, this is supposed to be a drama series, frankly. Like, it's supposed to, you know, show behind closed doors of what has transpired here over the last 20 years. And so you look at specifically with Deflategate, how yes, Belichick, it seems like they kind of paint a picture that he didn't really defend Brady when Brady defended him during Spygate. So that's sort of one start of the rift. But then even Robert Kraft too, like he's involved in that brain trust to sort of decide to push Deflategate away and just have Tom eat the suspension and then, you know, cut your losses and move forward. So like it does, it kind of shows that three-pronged approach of Brady, Bill, and Robert as, you know, again, the cornerstones of the franchise and how they, you know, how they have to come together and put differences to the side and try and keep winning. And so it was interesting to see Brady and hear Brady kind of talk. He doesn't really want to talk about Deflategate. He wants to put it past him, but I did like how he said, you know, that I forget what the exact line was, but basically like it was after the suspension, it was an FEA year, you know, F them all. And, you know, he eats the suspension. He goes to have the season of his life. And so, they don't really say too much. You can kind of tell that there was obviously, like you said, those internal rifts between them during this time.
Yeah. And the one thing that we talk about how there's not a lot of football being focused on here. The two games, though, that have had the most magnification on them is the Rams Super Bowl, the first one at the very least, and then the 28-3 Super Bowl. And yeah, for me, I think that comeback in the midst of everything that they set up, I think this was their Super Bowl to go. This was a mess, and they still were able to pull this off.
Sure.
And so you're having to navigate 25-point comeback. And I think it was one of the Falcons brass saying, everyone else behind me is celebrating and very comfortable, and I'm literally shivering going, guys, that's the freaking Grim Reaper right there. Yeah. This is not over.
Yeah, it was nuts. It was Scott Pioli, who was he was the former Patriots vice president of personnel, and then he went to work for the Falcons, and they were up 25. And yeah, just like you said, they're sitting there, and somebody else in the front office is like, you know, Scott, we gotta celebrate this. This is awesome. And he's like, are you effing kidding me? Like it was Freddy Krueger. He's like, that's Freddy Krueger over there. He's gonna come get some of us. Let's just hope he doesn't get us all. And of course, that's exactly what he does. And so it's a good point as far as that being, you know, they hit so many road bumps and they still end up on top, because, you know, they don't talk about it in the series. And the director, Matt Hamacek, was actually on our airwaves, WEEI, last week talking about how they decided, you know, what to ask and what to cover in the series. And he was like, as much as it's drama, we didn't want to get into anybody's personal lives. And so they don't mention it in the series, but Brady's mom had cancer during that time. And like, she was really, really sick. And, you know, she's obviously still with us, but at the time they didn't think she was going to make it. And so he was dealing with that. He was dealing with like a sick mom, Deflategate. Everybody's still thinking he was a cheater. He comes back. And again, he throws like 26 touchdowns and 2 picks. They go 11-1 in the games he plays, with Garoppolo on his heels. Like, they draft Garoppolo. Garoppolo has to play a couple games. He plays well, ends up getting hurt. He comes back and he just, again, I mentioned the FEA year. And so that was, you're right, one of the real seasons where they hit so many roadblocks and road bumps. And, you know, they still come out on top and are able to put their differences aside and win a Super Bowl.
Yeah. And moving back to some of the other episodes that have really been fascinating, and it's continuing to set up this thing for me where in 9 and 10, and I believe you've watched the entire series, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So now you can tell me if I'm right or wrong or whatever you're allowed mm-hmm. to say. It feels like it's setting up as, this isn't very shocking that it fell apart when it did, when they get to Malcolm Butler being benched against Philadelphia, the continued rift between Belichick, Alex Guerrero being told to pretty much step away from all team mm-hmm. facility activities, and just eventually the very light piece of straw just snaps. And I think that the way they've presented it, and you can agree or disagree is that they're like, look, this has been a mess for 20 years. Can you believe it? It makes me sort of be like, winning is hard. But in this sense, it made me appreciate Michael Jordan's run a little bit more because of the
Sure.
mess that they had to deal with and all the things that he and Phil Jackson were having to go with. Dennis Rodman is a head case in his own right. Scottie Pippen doesn't want to play in the final
Right.
Championship run. There's so much happening with Brady and this Patriots thing. It makes me almost not respect it a little more, but just appreciate how difficult it is. And maybe if Kansas City's having their own or beginning to have that, I'm not saying
Right.
anything is, but
Sure.
it's like, man, winning is hard. I don't know how
Yeah.
they do this.
100%. I think that's a really, honestly, that's a good way to look at, you know, that's a good lens to look at this through, right? Because you can pick it apart. And, you know, we talked about this before, like, you know, trying to decipher how this whole thing is portrayed. Like it's, you know, when I write my recaps every week, it's like, you know, I'm not a film critic, so I don't know what, you know, is good or bad as far as, you know, what stories to tell and whatnot, right? But if you look at it objectively, sure, you can pick it apart as a Belichick hit piece if you want, and you can look at how Kraft's, you know, how involved they may have been. But at the end of the day, the way the directors and the authors set it up is, we're going to tell their stories and you can decide what, you know, what you think of it. And I think that is a good lens to look at through. It's like, there was things happening at every step of the way over the 20 years. You talk about, you know, the Bledsoe decision, you talk about Spygate, you talk about Deflategate, undefeated season, like Aaron Hernandez, like they hit so much. And, you know, instead of looking at it as, well, they're just trying to tear this thing down, it's like, no, these are all human. People are human. You know, things happen. This is real life. This isn't just fantasy land, sports land. This is, you know, things are actually happening in people's personal lives and on the field and off the field, and decisions have to be made. And you're right, they're still able to hold it together and win for so long. And so eventually, you know, the saying goes, like, all good things don't last forever. Like, that's true. And so it did kind of break apart at the seams near the very end. But after six Super Bowls and after, you know, nine Super Bowl appearances and MVPs and coach of the years, and like, you know, they cement their legacy as two of the greatest ever. And so I think that is honestly a better way to look at it as a Patriots fan is, look, this wasn't just, you know, rainbows and butterflies for 20 years. This was, you know, real crap that was happening, and they were still able to, you know, again, I've said it three or four times now, but put their differences to the side at the end of the way and at the end of the day and win for so long.
Right. And what makes me so excited to look at this is that, and we've talked about, I mentioned from the audience that's listening right now, we talked about this before. We've tried to film this once and it had some difficulties aside from that, but this is actually nice because we get to rehash, we get to sort of establish some grounds here. But the one word that I wanted to use, Mike, with the entire documentary was honest. And it didn't, what I was worried about was going to go, okay, I've seen the documentaries where it just glorifies the entire thing.
Right.
And it is six parts, six Super Bowls, and that's all you get. It's a very basic vanilla picture. There are things in this documentary, and trust me, I've seen as many Patriots videos, shorts, documentaries as the next guy, and there are things in here that I've never seen before. And that you
right.
go, oh, I didn't know, like the Ernie Adams in episode, I think it was episode two, basically encouraging Bill to say, hey, let's probably try to get Brady going in the offense here, because if we give Warner the ball back, we're probably not going to win this game
right.
If it goes to overtime. Is there anything in this documentary for you that you saw and you didn't have original knowledge or you maybe got an inkling of and you were just left fascinated by?
Yeah, I would say early on, the way they paint the picture of Drew Bledsoe, like I, you know, back in whatever it was, obviously I was born in 1997. So like I didn't fully understand the ramifications of what Drew Bledsoe was to not only this team, but in the NFL in general. Like, he was the man. He signed a $100 million contract. He was in McDonald's commercials. He was, you know, the gunslinger. He was like in that group of gunslingers with like guys like Dan Marino and Brett Favre. And, you know, he obviously, you know, wasn't their caliber of a player per se, but, you know, he was throwing the ball all around the yard before anybody was really doing it. And I didn't fully realize that he was that guy until they painted the picture in episode one. And, you know, the fact that they signed him to a 10-year, $100 million contract, the biggest contract in NFL history, and then he started only two more games for the team, that put that much more pressure on Bill Belichick to have to make that decision. Like, this isn't just any Joe Schmo starting quarterback. It's like, oh, well, you're hurt and this guy's playing all right, so we're just going to put you to the side. Like, this was the franchise. This was the Patriots guy. This was, at the time, probably one of the best Patriots in history. And for Bill to have the, you know, the wherewithal and the guts to say, no, we're going to stick with Tom through all of that, that, you know, that just painted a much clearer picture for me as to what that decision really was. And so that was sort of my big takeaway early. As far as later on in the series, I mean, I guess just, you know, the toll that Deflategate put on Brady, they, you know, they paint that a lot clearer, in episode either, I think it was episode 7, episode 8 was more of the Jimmy Garoppolo stuff. Episode 7, they're like, Brady, Darrell Revis said Brady was like crying to them, like literally in tears, telling them like, I didn't do this. I am not a cheater. This is not on me. Like, I don't know what happened, but I'm not involved. Like, for him to take it that to heart, like, is, you know, is telling. And it frankly, it tells me that he really didn't have anything to do with Deflategate. And that, you know, the whole thing was kind of a sham from the start, obviously, as they show in the episode. But, you know, for him to be that emotional about it, and Danny Amendola talks about it, you know, it was on his kids. Like, his kids would come home and say, like, they're calling you a cheater. Like, the teachers are calling you a cheater. Like, being Tom Brady and having these kids in school and having Tom Brady be your father is like just a different, you know, lens to look through life. And so that, you know, that really, and again, I mentioned that Brady's mom was sick, and they, you know, for him to have to go through all that, like, it painted a much clearer picture to me on, you know, the struggle that he had gone through, you know, during that suspension and during that time.
And Mike, in your coverage of not only just the Patriots in general, but this dynasty has added an extra unique element to this offseason. I don't know if it was necessarily timed, because I'm sure it was timed plenty in advance before Bill's parting with the team took place. But yeah, it feels interesting that this is the timing of it, with Mayo coming in his first year. They're instilling this new era, and this feels like the final look back at what those 20 years meant. And I don't know how much the dynasty dives into the post-Brady era with Newton and Mac Jones. I doubt very little, but in terms of an audience reception with this documentary, you've been posting a lot of articles about it, a lot of reactions to it. You had some tweets really blow up about this. Mm-hmm. In your opinion, what's been the, I guess, because a lot of your audience is New England based, New England fans, what has been their reaction to this documentary and from a local community perspective?
Yeah, I would say locally, there has been a lot of negative pushback from the doc. You know, I mentioned it earlier how they're calling it, a lot of people think it's just framed as a Belichick hit piece, and that the Crafts are heavily involved, and that they're behind the scenes pulling, you know, pulling the curtain and pulling the strings. And that has sort of been the overall, I guess, the view of it from around here. And I will give the author of the book, Jeff Benedict, and the director, rather, Matt Hamacek, a lot of credit, because they've stayed at the forefront of this thing, and they haven't published it and then ducked. Like, Jeff and Matt have been, you know, they've been local in Boston, and they've been coming on our shows. They've been going on, you know, our competitor, the Sports Hub shows, and they've been talking to NBC Sports Boston and Mass Live. And they've, you know, they've stayed in front of it and said, like, they've kind of wanted to explain themselves throughout and say, like, no, this is why we did this, and this is why this is this way. And so, again, I give them credit for that, because they're not hiding from it. And they're saying, like, what we tried to do is use what everyone's saying and tell the story that way. And so, you know, there have been some weird things, like they didn't show the full Aaron Hernandez press conference with Bill, where he explains, like, in detail that this is what happened, and, you know, not exactly what happened, but he explains sort of their thought process and their draft process. And people feel like, you know, he got the short end of the stick in that, and I would agree. So a lot of it hasn't been framed the right way, but I think overall what they've done is try to just let the story tell itself. And, you know, the other kind of strange thing was the beginning of episode 7, where, like, Rupert Murdoch is there just, like, you know, loathing over Robert Kraft. Like, I thought that was weird and kind of unnecessary, talking about, like, Kraft's ring being stolen by Putin. And that was kind of odd to me, I will say that, but overall, in my opinion, I think they've done a decent job with it, but I don't think that has been, I guess, the view of New England all over. I think they, you know, they see it as the Crafts kind of getting their final hit on Bill. And I will say, too, I wonder if, you know, there was reporting that following the Colts loss in Germany that, you know, the decision was made then that Belichick was gone. And I'm starting to wonder if how much of that, you know, if that was actually the truth, because then the following week, the promo for this dynasty started to come out that week and they scheduled it, you know, this, now it's going to be coming out in February, and they could have easily held it and said, you know, we're not going to do it yet. And I wonder if they did decide to keep Belichick, if this would have came out. I really do wonder that. I don't know anything. I'm not sure, but the timing of that mixed with the timing of the Germany game, and, you know, it all kind of lines up where we're ending it with Bill. And this is the final, you know, the final bow on the 20-year dynasty.
Interesting. Yeah. I don't distinctly remember. I just, because it's a promo, so it gets kind of lost in translation.
Of course, yeah. You don't remember exactly when it comes, right?
Yeah, but that week, I remember it being sort of floated around. It was an ugly game too, like you remember that. Yeah. That was probably it. Kraft felt very strongly about their representation internationally, and for them to sort of not lay a goose egg, but pretty close to it with the Jones interceptions. That Zappe comes in relief, barely even warm. So yeah, that was quite the mess. Yeah. For you, Mike, with the coverage of this, and I think it's so fascinating that there's free agency going on, it's a new era for New England, Gerard Mayo comes in, there's a lot happening, but as a writer and taking sort of, as you remember, you're not, you said you're not a film critic, but there's a certain way to approach this, I guess. For you, what was that strategy going in, saying I'm going to make sure it's covered this way, or did sort of the representation of the documentary, the way they presented it, did that sort of dictate how you, in your way, presented your coverage and your writing?
Yeah, I mean, as a, you know, as a writer and I guess sort of a reporter, like, you know, frankly, the way I work for WEEI is like, they kind of just let me, you know, not do what I want, but, you know, I can write columns, I can write opinion pieces, I can, you know, just write straight news. And so with this, I've sort of tried to take an approach of doing both, right? You know, sort of giving my opinion and presenting nuggets, but also just laying out the facts. And like, with, for example, right, with the Drew Bledsoe episode, the first one, like, you know, I would, you know, each episode I've done like nuggets and rapid reactions. And so like for the first one, I wrote like, I didn't realize Drew Bledsoe was the man, but then I also wrote like, you know, Bill Belichick and Lawyer Malloy, like this rift was, you know, funny and interesting, like, you know, kind of things like that. And just laying out some interesting points and things that stuck out to me. But again, turning it to the fans and saying, watch it for yourselves and you know, you be the judge. And one episode that, you know, I tried to stay away from giving my, you know, real opinion and just laying out the facts, obviously, was the Aaron Hernandez episode, right? Because who am I to sit here and give my opinion on, you know, a murder case and be like, this, you know, this was BS or this, like, that, you know, that's not my place. And so, frankly, I find it hard, and, you know, kudos to them for portraying the episode the way they did. And some of it was kind of, people thought it was shady and they tried to pin it on Belichick. And, but again, I'm not going to sit here and, you know, put that in writing, because again, that's not my place. I'm here to, you know, report and tell it like it is. And so that was one where I just, you know, wrote about it, laid out the facts and said, you know, this is what Deion Branch said, this is what Belichick said, this is what, you know, X, Y, and Z said. And again, that's, it's not, frankly, it's not my place to say, like, I think they tried to pin it on Bill, or if Bill was at fault. Like, again, just lay out the facts in that. So it's a unique balance. And yeah, that's kind of the way I've decided to, you know, write and cover this thing so far.
Has there been an episode for you that's been incredibly fascinating, or one that really sticks out for any sort of reason? I think episode 4 has been my favorite so far, in terms of going from Spygate to their own version of Revenge Tour. They dove in so much with that, and I think it magnified how significant the Giants upset was, because they were destroying everybody. And for my audience, apologize if there's a little sniffle to my voice. It's allergy season in Clemson, South Carolina. But the upset with the Giants, I remember talking to my dad after that and thinking, asking him, what was it like for you to watch that upset? And he said it was one of the craziest things I've ever seen. And I think the documentary does a good job of magnifying that. But for you, though, what was, in these 8 episodes we've seen so far, maybe it's 9 or 10, and what has been the most, I guess, episode that sticks out to you?
Yeah. Honestly, it's probably episode 9. And so I can't dive into too much to it yet. You know, what I can say is that they talk about the Malcolm Butler benching, and there is still really no answer. I was going to keep this close to the vest, but, you know, one of my colleagues, Dakota Randall, who used to work for Nesson, already sort of leaked the bag out on this on, you know, on Twitter. He wrote about it. And so Robert Kraft basically says that it was a personal decision from Bill. He doesn't know what it is. He doesn't go into it, but he said that he heard it was a, you know, a personal rift with, if you will, between Bill and Malcolm Butler. And Robert basically says, this is the first time that I felt Belichick didn't do what was best for the team. And that's where it's left. And so there's still no real answer. That's what Kraft tells us. But other than that, everybody else, Josh McDaniels and Malcolm Butler, Devin McCourty, they all say that they have no idea why Butler wasn't benched. And so that's a fascinating part of episode 9. And then it gets into a little bit more detail about, you know, Brady and Guerrero, and he's working on, you know, Gronk. And like you said, Belichick doesn't allow him on, you know, team planes and team facilities and things like that. And it gets into sort of the rift between, and they mentioned at the end of episode 8 where, you know, Brady starts to become this, like, I guess his own brand, and he starts TB12 and he becomes the greatest quarterback ever. And he sort of starts to do things that, you know, were best for Tom and not for the team. And so it gets into that whole second layer of, you know, rift and disagreement, I guess, between Bill and Brady.
Like we're saying, it's just slowly breaking apart. And I think this was for 9 and 10, it's probably the coverage that I remember the most, because it was the most magnified in the national news, is that there was a lot of noise in these final two Super Bowl runs for New England that I distinctly remember. I remember the Garoppolo trade going down. I remember Guerrero being banned from facilities and thinking, what is happening? And I guess now we get our more in-depth answer for that.
Right. That's what makes it, that's what makes these last couple, you know, even more fascinating, is that, you know, again, we were older and we were around and more cognizant during these times. Like, and that's why I mentioned the Bledsoe thing. Like, I was born in 1997. I wasn't around when he was drafted. I was 3 years old when they made the decision to move on from him. So, like, you don't really remember it. Where these ones, you remember it, and you remember going, oh, I wonder what happened here. And then you get a little bit more background and detail into it. So, again, these next couple are a good, a fun watch. And so, yeah, you look forward to it, and I guess you'll have to see what happens. But, yeah.
Fascinating stuff here from Mike Cadlick. Mike, before we wrap up, is there anything that you want, any final thoughts? Where can people find you? I'll certainly have your Twitter linked in the description.
Yeah.
For the audience to come follow you for all the Patriots coverage and SpongeBob gifs to describe the day. Still rolling strong, Mike. Those are fascinating.
Yeah, have to do it. Have to go and, like you said, roll with SpongeBob. There's a SpongeBob gift for everything, and I'm determined to make that known. So if you want to be along for that journey, follow me on Twitter. Like you said, you'll link it, but at Mike Cadlick, all of our Patriots coverage, especially in the crazy free agency season at WEEI.com. Part of the Six Rings podcast, so you can follow that on Twitter at Six Rings Pod. It's myself, Nick Fitzy Stevens, and Andy Hart. So. We'll be on there all the time with all our Patriots coverage. And other than that, yeah, keep watching the Dynasty. Keep being a fan of the Patriots. It's a different change, a different shift, but you know, keep it locked in, because things are going to change, hopefully for the better for this team. So yeah, thanks for having me. This is a good time, and you know, happy to do it again sometime.
And when you trademark the Squidward Patriot meme, we'll have you back on to discuss that breakdown.
Sounds good.
Sure. Guys, this is Mike Cadlick of WEEI, Patriots beat writer. Just someone I discovered recently, I think it was last May, I ended up started following him. Great Patriots coverage, a very just great approach to what he does. Certainly recommend it. He's a rising star in that community too. But guys, appreciate thanks it. For watching episode 158 of the Mammoth Plan podcast. And guys, before we wrap up, I want to thank you for all the downloads, all the views, all the listens. It has been a crazy 2024. We're going to continue to kill it. I'm going to try to drop this episode after we record this and wrap this up. So it'll probably be up around 1 o'clock on a Tuesday. But whenever you're listening, thank you so much for tuning in. If you stuck to the very end, comment down below what your impressions are of the Dynasty if you've watched it. And let Mike know that Grayson sent you when you follow him. But guys, thank you so much for watching today's episode of the Mammoth Plan podcast. Subscribe for more. And as always, have a great day and take care.